Hello, this is Betsy Waugh, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the Thursday, November 13th, issue of the Democrat and Chronicle on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Monroe proposes budget of $1.57 billion. The plan includes a 36-cent cut in property tax rate. By Kyria Weaver, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network. Monroe County Executive Adam Bellow presented his 2026 budget proposal on November 7th, a proposal that continues to reduce the property tax rate. He claimed the $1.5 billion proposal is a financial plan with a focus on fiscal stability, protecting taxpayers, and investing in public safety and public health initiatives. In addition to these priorities, Bellow mentioned how this plan comes at a wobbly time as changes at the federal level could impact future federal support. Quote, the proposed 2026 county budget comes at a time of significant uncertainty, unlike anything we've faced in county government in recent years, Bellow said, with questions surrounding future federal support and potential funding rescissions. Every decision we make today must protect Monroe County taxpayers and ensure the county's long-term stability, unquote. Some financial highlights of Bellow's proposal include a total spending of $1.57 billion, which is a 1.9% increase over the 2025 budget. The proposal will also bring the property tax rate down by 36 cents to $5.67 per $1,000 of assessed value. Over the past 6 years, the Bellow administration has reduced the tax rate by $3.12 per thousand, or 35%. The 2020 tax rate was $8.79 per $1,000. The proposed budget plans to expand investments in public health and substance use prevention with continued funding for the IMPACT team, 24/7 opioid crisis hotline, community naloxone distribution boxes, and the second year of the county's Call to Action public education campaign. The budget also continues to support working families with an additional $11.2 million going towards daycare services to meet the increased demand and ensure more families have access to reliable childcare. Other major public safety and emergency response initiatives the budget will fund include Monroe Alert, a new mass public emergency alerting system that will send urgent notifications to residents through text message, phone call, and email during life-threatening situations. EMS Dashboard, a first-of-its-kind system to help 911 dispatchers and EMS agencies share real-time data, improve response coordination, and enhance patient care. Body-worn cameras for probation officers, a step forward in transparency and accountability that aims to strengthen community trust and officer safety. An increase in county support in the Monroe County Sheriff's Office to help recruit and retain qualified law enforcement professionals. The Monroe County Legislature is set to consider the spending plan and vote on it during their meeting on December 9th. The reporter, Kyria Weaver, works as the government and you reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle with a focus on how government actions affect communities and neighborhoods in Rochester and in Monroe County. Get in touch at kweaver@gannett.com. Major announcements very soon at Marketplace Mall as interior tenants exit. By Marcia Greenwood, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network. Marketplace Mall has been shedding businesses for a while. Now its owner, Wilmorite, is working to relocate remaining tenants that have interior-only entrances to other Wilmorite properties, a company spokesman confirmed November 11th. She did not provide a timeline. At this point, according to the mall's website, businesses in that category number about a dozen. And when we visited in August, one vendor was operating in the food court. Quote, there are several large-scale deals with prospective tenants that are pending for the entire interior space at the mall, but these agreements have not been fully executed and cannot be announced yet, she wrote in an email statement. We look forward to making some major announcement very soon, unquote. Businesses with exterior entrances will remain open, including Dave & Buster's, IndyCart Raceway, Floor & Decor, JCPenney, Land's End, and Sportsman's Warehouse, she wrote. Currently, the mall property is dominated by the University of Rochester Medical Center's 330,000-square-foot Saunders Center for Orthopedics and Physical Performance, built on the site of a former Sears store. Marketplace Mall opened October 7, 1982, and at the time was the largest shopping mall between Long Island and Cleveland. Featuring 150 businesses, it was anchored by JCPenney, which is still open, Sears, now the site of the URMC clinic, and local department stores Sibley's, McCurdy's, and B. Foreman, all long gone. In 2016, Wilmorite announced plans to turn Marketplace into an outlet center, but they never materialized. Plans for the URMC facility were unveiled in 2019, and it opened in 2023. Retailers Offering Early Black Friday 2025 Deals by Emily Barnes, Cheryl V. Jackson, and Leanna Norman, New York Connect Team, USA Today Network. There's still over 2 weeks until Thanksgiving and Black Friday, but retailers like Walmart and Target are getting a head start. Walmart announced it will offer early Black Friday deals both online and in store that will continue through Cyber Monday, and Target is gearing up for a 6-day sale later this month. Here's what to expect. Walmart's 2025 Black Friday deals. Walmart has 3 different waves of Black Friday deals beginning the week of November 14th. According to Walmart's website, it operates 111 retail units in New York, and here's a closer look at what it's offering. Event 1 is from November 14th to the 16th, and the first event runs November 14th to 16th, but Walmart Plus members get 5 hours of early access online beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on November 13th. All deals will be available online and in stores for the entire event. There are several specials listed, and they include things like a 4K Google TV, Barbie Malibu Travel Playset, Circuit Explorer 3 Bundle, the Dyson V12 Detect Slim Cordless Vacuum Cleaner, Ford 24V Ride-On, Goodyear Reliant All-Season Tires, GoV65 LED Lights, LaAge Hairstyler, Men's and Women's Levi's Signature Denim, My Texas House Glitter Trees Set of 3. Event 2 is November 25th to the 30th, and in stores, runs online only the 25th to the 27th, then in stores November 28th to the 30th, and Walmart Plus members get 5 hours early access online beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, November 24th, and the event 3 is on Cyber Monday, December 1st. This third event, which takes place on Cyber Monday, is online only, and Walmart Plus members get 5 hours early access online beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on November 30th. What is Walmart Plus and how much does it cost? That is a paid membership offering early access to deals, free shipping, and more. You can sign up at walmart.com for a free 30-day trial to try Walmart Plus out. The annual Walmart Plus plan is $98 or $8.17 per month after your free 30-day trial. What about Target's Black Friday deals? While Target's early Black Friday sale ended November 8th, shoppers can still get discounts of up to 50% online throughout the month of November. The major retailer's official Black Friday and Cyber Monday sale starts online November 27th and runs through December 2nd, but sale specifics have yet to be revealed. What is Target's membership program? Target's program is called Target Circle is free to join, and you can sign up online at Target.com or via the Target app. You'll need to sign up for the membership program to unlock early access to Target's Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals. One of the reporters, Emily Barnes, reports on consumer-related issues for the USA Today Network's New York Connect team, focusing on scam and recall-related topics. Follow her on X and Instagram at @ByEmilyBarnes. Get in touch at ebarnes@gannett.com. Part of New York Highway Named for Fallen Airman by Madison Scott, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network. A crowd gathered on Route 21 in front of the family home of the late U.S. Air Force technician Sergeant Corey Wade on November 11th to witness the unveiling of the sign dedicating that portion of the New York Highway in his honor. Wade, a 2008 Red Jacket High School graduate who served honorably as a medical logistics airman with the 48th Rescue Squadron of the U.S. Air Force, was killed during a training exercise in June of 2023. Assemblyman Jeff Gallahan, Republican from Manchester, Ontario County, who championed the bill to rename this portion of Route 21 in Wade's honor, stood in front of the sign with Wade's parents and State Senator Pam Helming, Republican of Canandaigua. Quote, "Today, being the 11th, is kind of a special day because Corey was born on the 11th. This legislation was signed in Albany on the 11th, and we are presenting today on the 11th, unquote, Gallahan said. This portion of Route 21, which has been renamed Highway Dedicated to Chief Sergeant Corey Wade, goes from the intersection of State Route 96 to Ladding Road, Standpipe Road, and passes directly in front of the Wade family home, where the unveiled sign is now located. Wade's parents, Mike Wade and Jill Sauer Betts, got emotional as Helming spoke of the service and sacrifice that she said defined Wade's life. Helming spoke of a similar bill she sponsored that dedicated a portion of the other end of Route 21 in Canandaigua to local Korean War veteran Ralph Calabrese, who died in 2021. Quote, "When I think of Corey and I think of Ralph, I can't see anything more fitting than both ends of this road are dedicated to these tremendous heroes," she said. "I like to think that Ralph was waiting for Corey, and now I can't imagine what the two of them are up to," unquote. Who was Technical Sergeant Corey Wade of Manchester? He immediately enlisted in the Air Force after graduation in 2008, Gallahan said. His exemplary service earned him numerous awards and decorations, including the Air and Space Commendation Medal, Air and Space Achievement Medal, Joint Meritorious Unit Award, Air and Space Outstanding Unit Award, National Defense Service Medal Ribbon, Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, and the U.S. Air Force Non-Commissioned Officer Professional Military Education Graduate Ribbon. Mike Wade spoke through his tears about his son's humbleness at the unveiling ceremony on Veterans Day. He said he wasn't even aware of some of his son's awards and honors until after his passing. Quote, "He didn't think that he was any different than anyone else," his father said. "It never gets easier, but now his name will be in front of his bedroom," unquote. Wade was known for his love of the outdoors, boating, riding motorcycles, skiing, and enjoying time with family and friends. He shared a close bond with his beloved dog, Kaiser, his family stated after the bill to rename the highway was passed. Members of the U.S. Air Force Honor Guard and the Shortsville American Legion helped unveil the signage dedicating the highway to Wade. The reporter, Madison Scott, is a journalist with the Democrat and Chronicle who covers breaking and trending news for the Finger Lakes region. She has an interest in how the system helps or doesn't help families with missing loved ones. She can be reached at mdscott@gannett.com. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Democrat and Chronicle on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Veterans Get Their Due by Mike Murphy, Canandaigua Daily Messenger, USA Today Network. Eugene Girard, a 103-year-old World War II veteran from Canandaigua and a Post member, led a crowd in the Pledge of Allegiance during a Veterans Day event, November 11th, at American Legion Post 256 in Canandaigua. The ceremony was led by new Post 256 commander Matt Parsons. Post 256 will host a dinner for veterans at 6 p.m. on November 15th. All veterans and a guest are welcome for a free dinner. The cost for civilians is $10 per meal. The American Legion is at 454 North Main Street in Canandaigua. RSVP to Post 256 at ALNY256.com. The Fairy Godmothers of Rochester to host first dress drive of prom season by Janae Shields, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network. The Fairy Godmothers of Rochester are back for prom season and will be hosting their first dress drive this weekend. Founded by Renee Spallina and Cynthia Jackson in 2004, the Fairy Godmothers is a program for high school teens who cannot afford a prom dress and accessories. The program is donation-based and offers teens with a variety of new and gently used dresses to choose from. From 10 a.m. to noon on November 15th, the Fairy Godmothers will be accepting donations to prepare for the 2026 season at the Marketplace Mall, 1 Miracle Mile Drive in Henrietta. Those making donations can find the boutique by entering through the North Mall entrance across from Snipes. The first official prom dress fair is set for 4 to 7 p.m. on March 11th in 2026. Obituaries. Joseph Richard Fasino, F-A-S-I-N-O, age 89, West Irondequoit, passed on October 20th. Arrangements are through the Paul W. Harris Funeral Home. Tomas A. James, age 72, passed on January 10th. Gertrude R. Montulli, M-O-N-T-U-L-L-I, age 61, in Waterport, New York, passed on November 9th. Service time is on November 22nd at 11 a.m. at the New Hope Community Church. Joanne Dorothy Briner Nacy, N-A-C-E-Y, passed on November 6th. Arrangements are through the J. Leonard McAndrew Funeral Home, LLC. Service time is November 17th at 10:30 a.m. at the Holy Sepulchre Cemetery. Gerard G. Nau, N-A-U, age 95, in Brockport, New York. Arrangements are through the Walker Brothers Funeral Home. Service time is November 13th at 4 p.m. at 15 West Avenue. Alexander Gray Scutt, S-K-U-T-T, age 76, in Ithaca, New York, passed on November 6th. Arrangements are through the Bangs Funeral Home. Service time is November 14th at 11 a.m. Service location is the First Congregational Church in Ithaca. Joan Swarthout, S-W-A-R-T-H-O-U-T, age 94, in Henrietta, New York, passed on November 7th. The arrangements are at the Miller Funeral and Cremation Services, Incorporated. And Sister Mary Lucy Wallawender, age 91, in Brighton, New York, passed on November 10th. Arrangements are through the John M. Hedges Funeral Home. Service time is November 14th at 10 a.m. at the Mercy Center, and interment is at St. Joseph's Cemetery in Auburn. Student loan forgiveness changing. Trump plans could help some but hurt others, by Medora Lee, USA Today. Forgiveness for some, but maybe not for others, is what President Donald Trump's student loan forgiveness plan is amounting to, which is sowing uncertainty for borrowers, experts said. In a big win for borrowers in October, the Department of Education agreed with the American Federation of Teachers to process student loan forgiveness applications for borrowers who reached payment thresholds on an income contingent repayment plan, or the pay-as-you-earn plan, as long as the plans remain in effect. Trump plans to phase out the plans by July 1, 2028. Income-based repayment plans also are eligible for forgiveness. Celebrations quickly faded when less than 2 weeks later, the department issued a rule critics say would curb public service loan forgiveness, or PSLF. The rule, effective July 1st, allows the Education Department to exclude forgiveness for those who work at organizations it believes engage in quote-unquote criminal activity. The rule would allow the Education Department to, quote, target sanctuary jurisdictions as well as nonprofit organizations providing support to immigrant families, gender-affirming care, diversity and equity in the workplace, and protecting the First Amendment rights of protesters, unquote, nonprofit consumer advocacy group Protect Borrowers said in a statement. PSLF, created in 2007, cancels a borrower's remaining federal debt after 10 years of repayment for those who work for a quote-unquote public service employer, generally defined as a government or a nonprofit entity. It's meant to reward people who work for the quote-unquote public good, like firefighters, police, public educators, military, and public health workers. The Education Department said eligibility standards for what constitutes a qualifying public service employer haven't been adequately monitored. As a result, certain organizations, quote, engaging in illegal activities that harm their communities and the public good, unquote, have qualified, it said in a statement. Taxpayer funds should never directly or indirectly subsidize illegal activities, unquote, said Undersecretary of Education Nicholas Kent. PSLF, quote, was meant to support Americans who dedicate their careers to public service, not to subsidize organizations that violate the law, whether by harboring illegal immigrants or performing prohibited medical procedures that attempt to transition children away from their biological sex, unquote. More than 40 million Americans hold student debt totaling more than $1.6 trillion. Over 9 million borrowers may be eligible for PSLF, according to a 2022 estimate from Protect Borrowers. What will happen to PSLF? PSLF won't end, but its rules will likely be settled by the courts after a flurry of lawsuits were filed shortly after the Education Department announcement. 21 states and the District of Columbia sued the Education Department over the new rule restricting eligibility for PSLF. Quote, public service loan forgiveness was created as a promise to teachers, nurses, firefighters, and social workers that their service to our communities would be honored, unquote, New York Attorney General Letitia James said in a statement. Quote, instead, this administration has created a political loyalty test disguised as a regulation, unquote. A coalition of cities across the United States, labor unions, and nonprofit organizations also filed a lawsuit claiming the same. How does this affect borrowers? Stay on course, but be flexible, experts said. Borrowers should focus on keeping their loans in good standing with consistent payments and maintaining documentation and payment history, said Ken Ruggiero, chief executive of Lender Ascent. Quote, at the same time, it's smart to build flexibility into your long-term plan, he said. Federal forgiveness programs can be valuable, but they're also subject to political and legal changes. Look at PSLF as one possible path, not the only one. If forgiveness comes through, that's a huge win. But if not, you need to make sure that you're still on track toward financial independence and not relying solely on government discretion for relief, unquote. Borrowers should also be prepared to repay more of their loans due to the Education Department's other changes to student loans next year, said Kent Smetters, director of the Penn Wharton budget model. Only two repayment plans will be available for loans taken out from July 1. A standard repayment plan that allows borrowers to repay over 10 to 25 years based on their loan amounts regardless of income, and a repayment assistance plan with monthly payments between 1 and 10% of borrowers' discretionary income. As an example of how much more a borrower may end up paying, Smetters said consider an undergraduate borrower with $30,000 in debt with a 6.4% annual interest rate, along with a starting salary of $45,000 with a 3% annual wage growth. Under the most generous SAVE plan, SAVE is uppercase letters, that protected more income than any other plan, this person would make a monthly payment of $42 in the first year, reaching $116 per month by year 20. Over the 20 years, the average monthly payment would be about $75. Total payments over 20 years would be $17,938. However, the graduate would have a remaining balance of $30,000 in year 20 that would be forgiven. Unlike some debt forgiveness, this option would not be deemed as reportable income under SAVE. Taxpayers are on the hook for the remaining balance. Under the repayment assistance plan, monthly payments start at $169 in the first year and reach $519 by year 20. The average monthly payment would be $217. Total payments equal $51,964. The entire loan would be paid off by the end of year 16, so taxpayers are not on the hook for anything. Quote, many people who would have gotten a big subsidy under the SAVE plan will no longer get any subsidy going forward, unquote, Smetters said. Trump, in Epstein emails now released by Bart Janssen, USA Today, from Washington. Jeffrey Epstein, the disgraced financier and accused sex trafficker, wrote that President Donald Trump, quote unquote, spent hours at my house with one of his victims and, quote unquote, knew about the girls, according to emails House Democrats released November 12th. The White House called the email release, quote, a smear, unquote. Trump attended parties with the billionaire and flew on his plane during the 1990s, but Trump later ousted Epstein from his club and forcefully denied knowing about the sex trafficking. Epstein died by suicide in prison in 2019 while awaiting trial. Democrats on the House Oversight and Accountability Committee released several emails that mentioned Trump in order to increase pressure on the Justice Department to release additional Epstein records. Quote, I want you to realize that dog that hasn't barked is Trump, unquote, Epstein wrote in one email to author Michael Wolff on April 2, 2011. The email continues after the name of the alleged victim of Epstein is redacted. Quote, spent hours at my house with him. He has never once been mentioned, unquote. Another Epstein email dated January 31, 2019 said, quote, of course he knew about the girls as he asked Ghislaine Maxwell to stop, unquote. Ghislaine Maxwell, an aide to Epstein, is serving a 20-year prison sentence for conspiracy to entice minors to travel to engage in sex acts. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt alleged that the unnamed victim is the email. In the emails is the late Virginia Giuffre, who Leavitt said, quote, repeatedly said President Trump was not involved in any wrongdoing, unquote. She called the release of emails part of a, quote, bad faith efforts to distract, unquote, from Trump's accomplishments. Quote, the Democrats selectively leaked emails to the liberal media to create a fake narrative to smear President Trump, Leavitt said. The fact remains that President Trump kicked Jeffrey Epstein out of his club decades ago for being a creep to his female employees, including Jeffrey, unquote. The Democratic revelations came as the House prepared to swear in a new lawmaker from Arizona, Democrat Adelita Grijalva, who was expected to provide the final signature needed to force a vote on the legislation that would release all Justice Department records about the Epstein investigation. The House bill would still face a vote in the Senate. Representative Robert Garcia of California, the top Democrat on the Oversight Committee, called the emails, quote, serious and disturbing, unquote. Quote, we won't stop until we end this White House cover-up, unquote, Garcia said on social media November 12th. Attorney General Pam Bondi has said she already released the Epstein records, other than pornographic videos and documents naming victims in the case. The reporter, Mike Wolf, was a freelance USA Today contributor from 2012 to early 2017. USA Today had no knowledge of any relationship between him and Jeffrey Epstein, nor any actions beyond his submissions for publication. We are committed to integrity and transparency as we uphold our editorial standards and maintain the trust of our readers. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Democrat and Chronicle on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. NFL Power Rankings. Eagles and Packers stay tight, Pats on the rise. By Nate Davis, USA Today. The NFL Power Rankings entered week 11 of the 2025 season. Number one, the Los Angeles Rams, last week also number one. Number two, the Seattle Seahawks, last week also number two. Number three, New England Patriots, last week they were sixth. Number four, the Denver Broncos, last week they were third. Philadelphia Eagles were in fifth place, last week in fourth. Sixth, the Green Bay Packers, last week they were fifth. Number seven, the Buffalo Bills, who were number seven last week. A terrible loss to Miami and a foreboding remaining schedule very likely mean this team will have to take the wildcard route this year in its ongoing pursuit of the ever-elusive Lombardi Trophy. Number eight, Kansas City Chiefs, also last week, number eighth. In ninth place, Detroit Lions, last year ninth. In tenth place, Indianapolis Colts, last week they were 11th. In 11th place, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, last year they were 10th. 12th place, Baltimore Ravens, last year they were 15th. In 13th place, the Houston Texans, last week 14th. 14th place, Jacksonville Jaguars, last week 13th. In 15th place, the San Francisco 49ers, last week in 16th. 16th place, Los Angeles Chargers, last week 20th place. 17th is where the Pittsburgh Steelers are ranked, last week they were in 12th. 18th place, Chicago Bears, same as last week. 19th place, Minnesota Vikings, same as last week. 20th place, Carolina Panthers, last week in 17th place. Cincinnati Bengals, last week they were in the 22nd place. Arizona Cardinals, last week 21st place. 23rd place, Dallas Cowboys, same as last week. 24th place, Washington Commanders, same as last week. 25th place, Cleveland Browns, last week 26th. 26th place, Miami Dolphins, last week 27th. 27th place, Atlanta Falcons, last week 28th. 28th place, New Orleans Saints, last week 30th place. 29th place, New York Jets, last week 31st place. 30th place, New York Giants, last week 25th. 31st place, Las Vegas Raiders, last week 29th. 32nd place, Tennessee Titans, last week 32nd place. High school football. Class A champs battle for a shot at glory. Brighton and the East World of Inquiry meet for state tourney berth. By James Johnson, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network. There are two champions in Section 5 Class A football, but it's time to see which team is the best in the group. Brighton and East and the World of Inquiry team meet November 14th under the lights at Rush Henrietta. The winner advances into the Class A state tourney, where the Section 5 champion meets the Buffalo region winner. The state qualifier with East/World of Inquiry and Brighton is the first time these teams have met this season. The Brighton players to watch, number 22, Matthew Heininger, number 8, Amari Snowden, number 4, Justin Medina, number 0, Leah Hopkins, number 2, Clarence Bell from the East High World of Inquiry players to watch. From the East High World of Inquiry players to watch, number 9, Tate Brown, and number 52, Jamie Anderson. Number 21, Zion Cook-Tyson, number 6, Legacy Taylor, and number 19, Tymir Gilbert. And that should be a fun game to watch. Remembering the unimaginable 2022 Highmark Stadium loss to the Vikings by Sal Mariana, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network. November 13th, 2022, the Vikings 33 and the Bills 30. By this time in my career covering the Bills, I thought I'd seen all there was to see, but I was wrong. I'd never seen anything quite like what happened at the end of this crazy game, where the Bills handed Minnesota a rub your eyes in disbelief, thank you very much, victory. Quote, I'm going to remember this one forever, unquote, said Vikings coach Kevin O'Connell, and it was abundantly understandable why, because a year later, it's still difficult to process how the Bills blew it. Never mind that they were up 27-10 late in the third quarter, which by itself makes this loss brutal, even though this was a good Minnesota team that began the day 7-1. They were still ahead 27-23 when the defense got the Vikings into a seemingly impossible 4th-and-18 situation at their own 27 at the 2-minute warning. No way the Vikings were escaping that mess, right? Wrong. Justin Jefferson made one of the greatest catches in NFL history. And that's not hyperbole. He leaped high into the air for a Kirk Cousins pass with Cam Lewis glued to him. And as they both got their hands on the ball, Jefferson was somehow able to rip it away with one hand as the two men came down together. Equally amazing, as they crashed to the turf, he prevented the ball from touching the ground and maintained possession to complete a 32-yard gain. Quote, it happened right in front of me, one of the more remarkable catches I've ever seen, unquote, O'Connell said. Certainly a punch in the gut, but the Bills were still ahead, 27-23, when they overcame that titanic blow and made a stirring goal line stand, stopping 2 fourth down plays from the 1-yard line. The second coming after Jordan Phillips had gone offside on the first attempt, giving Cousins a second crack, only to be stuffed on a quarterback sneak. Finally, game over, right? Wrong again. With the crowd going wild after all that drama, breathing a sigh of relief that the Bills had held on for dear life, Josh Allen fumbled the center snap on the very next play, and Minnesota's Eric Kendricks recovered in the end zone for a go-ahead touchdown with 41 seconds remaining. What? Did that just happen? Quote, you're all over the map, Cousins said. You expect to get in, you didn't get in. About as close as you can get without getting in. Defense does a phenomenal job, not only providing pressure there and also that recovery for a touchdown. I don't think I've ever seen that one. It's an interesting situation, just because I understand how and why it can happen. You have to get out. You don't want to get a safety and kick it out to the other team. It's a difficult situation. You want to still run the clock. So I understand the challenge there, unquote. Yet despite that horrific turn of events, the game still was not over. Allen picked himself up and completed 4 straight passes for 55 yards to set up Tyler Bass's tying 29-yard field goal. So into overtime we went, but the Bills just could not finish the deal. The Vikings won the coin toss and drove to a Greg Joseph field goal. And after Allen got the Bills to the Vikings 27, at the very least in position for a tying field goal, he threw a mind-numbing third-down interception to Patrick Peterson, which instantly ended the game. Quote, bad ball, bad decision. We were horrendous in the red zone, and that's on my shoulders, unquote, Allen admitted, looking more angry and upset than he has ever been during a press conference, and for good reason. Despite Allen throwing for 330 yards and running for 80, the Bills failed to score a touchdown on three of their six red zone opportunities. Allen's three total turnovers were all killers. Quote, "He's going to hate it for 24 hours, but I've got his back," unquote, said wide receiver Stephon Diggs. The loss knocked the Bills out of first place in the AFC East at 6-3, but one of the hallmarks of these Sean McDermott 2020s teams has been their ability to bounce back. Duly woken up by this loss, the Bills did not lose another game in the regular season and won their third straight division title. Though their quest for the elusive Super Bowl championship died an ugly death during a terrible 27-10 home loss to the Bengals in the divisional round. Celebrate the final season at Highmark Stadium with Farewell to the Ralph, Remembering Where We Cheered, Froze, Cried, and Bonded, 208-page keepsake capturing five decades of unforgettable Bills, Buffalo Bills moments, fan devotion, and stadium legacy. Pre-order now at https://billstadium.pictorialbook.com, and that is spelled after Bills Stadium, .pictorialbook.com to save 20%. Sal Moriana has covered the Buffalo Bills for four decades, including 35 years as the full-time beat writer for the DNC. He's written numerous books about the history of the team, and he's also co-host of the BLEAV, or Believe, in Bills podcast / YouTube show. He can be reached at moriana@gannett.com, and you can follow him on X at Sal Moriani and at Blue Sky at salmoriani.bsky.social. Sal Moriani, just so that you know, is spelled Salmaiorana. Holiday shopping season in the Finger Lakes opens with Chris Kindle Market by Mike Murphy, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network. The stately 1816 Federal-style mansion served as home to Gideon Granger, the longest-serving Postmaster General of the United States, and the four generations of Grangers who lived on the more than 12 acres of land at 295 North Main Street in Canandaigua. Granger Homestead and Carriage Museum tours are closed for the season, opening May 1st, 2026. For details, call 585-394-1472 or visit grangerhomestead.org. Okay, now about the article from Canandaigua. The holiday shopping season has begun, or at least it will, when the Canandaigua Chris Kindle Market opens its doors November 14th. The grounds of the Granger Homestead and Carriage Museum will be filled with more than 130 artisans offering unique holiday gifts as part of the charm of a quaint European village, which the organizers of the annual event do quite well in replicating each year. Because shopping builds quite the hunger and thirst, food, wine, and beer, including German specialties, will be available. Also, you can take part in what's billed as the best bake sale on the back porch. And don't forget the opening of the Festival of Trees, which will take folks all the way into December. The market opens from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. November 14th. The shopping and holiday fun continues from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. November 15th and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. November 16th. New this year, the bar will remain open until 6 p.m. and the food tent until 6:30 p.m. on November 14th, 5:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. on November 15th. Here's another perk. Free shuttles will take shoppers to downtown Canandaigua merchants on November 15th and 16th. Single-day admission is $8. Multi-day tickets are $15. Those under 12 get in free. Music and family entertainment are among the hallmarks of this annual holiday event. Kids or adults can pose for photos with Santa Claus and the Chris Kindle Angel. Elf School will be in session, and a children's lantern parade is part of the fun. When does the Festival of Trees at Granger Homestead start? Besides enjoying the beautifully decorated trees, mantles, and doorways, visitors can take part in a silent auction of trees, wreaths, jewelry, gift baskets, and seasonal decorations during the annual Festival of Trees. More than 100 items are displayed each year. The Festival of Trees is open Wednesdays through Sundays, November 14th to December 6th. The hours are 1 to 5, Wednesdays and Sundays, 1 to 7, Thursdays and Fridays, and 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturdays. It's closed on November 20th and Thanksgiving Day, which is November 27th. The cost is $5, $4 for senior citizens and Granger Homestead members, $1 for kindergartners to high school seniors, and free for those under 5. The reporter Mike Murphy covers Canandaigua and other communities in Ontario County and writes the Eat, Drink, and B. Murphy Food and Drink column. Follow him on X at MPN-MikeMurphy. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Democrat and Chronicle on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Shutdown deal includes some smaller provisions. Measures range from hemp rules to jab at special counsel. By Zachary Schmermel, S-C-H-E-R-M-E-L-E, from USA Today in Washington. Several eyebrow-raising proposals are tucked into the bills that were on track to end the longest ever federal government shutdown. While lawmakers' attention has centered mostly in recent days around measures to reverse thousands of federal employee layoffs, restart critical services, and generally turn the government's lights back on, a few smaller provisions in the giant funding package stand out. Some of the measures are bipartisan, others much less so. A few could present political problems. First, a jab at Jack Smith. The most controversial of the measures in the funding package allows a group of Republican senators to sue the government for up to $500,000 each, by the way. At issue is former special counsel Jack Smith's investigation into allegations of election interference after the 2020 presidential race. As part of that probe into the actions of President Donald Trump, Smith subpoenaed the phone records of more than half a dozen GOP lawmakers. While none of those lawmakers were charged, they were enraged to recently discover their communications were part of the evidence-gathering process. The legislation includes a provision waiving the government's immunity from lawsuits over the subpoenas. New cannabis regulation. Another component of the deal closes a loophole that for years has allowed the unregulated sale of certain hemp products nationwide. Hemp and marijuana are derived from the same plant, cannabis, but hemp contains lower amounts of THC, the compound that makes people high. The 2018 Farm Bill included a workaround that allowed THC products derived from hemp to be sold nationwide. Since then, sales have boomed. Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, argued November 10th on the Senate floor that the new regulations included in the shutdown-ending funding package would be akin to quote-unquote prohibition. Senators split unevenly across party lines for and against the measure. Ultimately, the new rule was kept in the bill, and the regulations are to take effect in 2026. Bolstered security for lawmakers. In the wake of conservative activist Charlie Kirk's assassination, lawmakers have been increasingly worried about their own safety and that of their families and staff. In the first week of November, a man who'd threatened to kill a member of Congress was arrested before entering a Senate building. The funding package includes $203.5 million to boost security for lawmakers, quote, in response to the evolving threat environment, unquote. To protect lawmakers in their home districts, $30 million will go toward reimbursing state and local law enforcement agencies for their assistance. Protections for Trump watchdog. The shutdown deal also retains full funding for the Government Accountability Office, a federal watchdog that has played a key oversight role of both Republicans and Democrats in Washington for decades. For months, the White House and some congressional Republicans have sought to weaken the agency that has repeatedly found Trump's second-term administration acting in violation of federal laws. And that's the end of that article. Judge to visit ICE site to determine conditions by Michael Loria, USA Today, from Chicago. When asked about nights at a U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement facility outside Chicago, Pablo Moreno Gonzalez hits his fists against his head and cries, quote, "It was too much, it was too much," unquote. Among issues the former detainee and others cited in courtroom testimony about conditions at the facility were overflowing toilets, no way to clean themselves, and nothing to eat beyond half-frozen Subway sandwiches. A federal judge out of the Northern District of Illinois responded on November 5th by ordering the Department of Homeland Security to improve conditions. On November 13th, another judge was set to visit the facility in Broadview, Illinois, a suburb 12 miles west of Chicago, to ensure court orders are being followed. U.S. Magistrate Judge Laura K. McNally on November 7th authorized attorneys who filed a lawsuit to visit the site. McNally also planned to visit, according to court filings. Quote, "No one should be subjected to the treatment and conditions that individuals at Broadview are currently experiencing," unquote, civil rights attorney Alexa Van Brunt said in a statement. The MacArthur Justice Center Illinois office director is representing Marino Gonzalez and other detainees. Quote, "These are urgent and necessary measures to protect these detainees and preserve their basic human rights. Our democracy is no place for inhumane, unsafe detention conditions," unquote. Van Brunt, attorneys with the ACLU of Illinois and others, filed a lawsuit over conditions on behalf of Marino Gonzalez and former detainee Felipe Agustin Zambacona. In response to testimony and court filings, U.S. District Judge Robert W. Gettleman issued a temporary restraining order compelling immigration authorities to make improvements. Quote, "It's a disturbing record. We don't want to treat people the way I've heard today people are being treated," unquote, Gettleman said after hearing hours of testimony. The facility is an immigration enforcement processing center where detainees are brought before moved out of state. The site has become a focal point of immigration enforcement activity amid President Donald Trump's Operation Midway Blitz crackdown. Homeland Security Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs Tricia McLaughlin said over, quote, 3,000 illegal aliens, including rapists, murderers, and gang members, unquote, have been arrested in connection with the Blitz. USA Today has not been able to independently verify the criminal background or immigration status of detainees. The site was designed to hold people for no more than 12 hours, but witnesses tested in court that detainees are being held for as long as 12 days. DHS officials issued a statement defending conditions at the facility, quote, "All detainees are provided with 3 meals a day, water, and have access to phones to communicate with their family members and lawyers. No one is denied access to proper medical care. Any claims there are subprime conditions at the Broadview ICE facility are false," unquote. Jana Brady, an attorney for the defendants, acknowledged the site is operating beyond its normal capacity, but said, quote, "It's a learning curve," unquote, and authorities are working to improve conditions. Trump allies among people pardoned, some backed false election fraud claims, by Josh Meyer, USA Today, from Washington. The more than 70 people pardoned over the weekend by President Donald Trump, including fake electors accused of helping him try to overturn the 2020 election, are likely only the beginning. Many more conservatives allegedly quote-unquote targeted by the administrations of President Joe Biden and Barack Obama are next, Trump pardon attorney Ed Martin said November 10th. Martin's statements come amid a year-long blitz of presidential pardons that have wiped the slate clean for many, including the January 6th rioters, numerous convicted fraudsters, and several political allies. Quote, "A very little bit behind the curtain. When I began as U.S. pardon attorney, POTUS encouraged us to look at two categories of Americans, especially, unquote, Martin said, POTUS being a reference to President of the United States. The category first was, quote, those who needed and deserve clemency, especially long-serving inmates who are ready to be released, unquote, Martin said in an ex post. Quote, second, he wanted us to look at those people who'd been targeted by the Biden administration, Martin said. The targeted group is a huge group of Americans, unquote. The 2020, quote, alternate electors and their affiliates, unquote, who were targeted by Justice Department and other investigators and prosecutors at the state level, were at the top of the list, Martin said. In pardons announced by Martin late November 9th, Trump pardoned scores of allies, including his former personal attorney, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who faced charges and investigations alleging interference in the 2020 election. Those acts of clemency followed his pardon on the first day of his second term of about 1,600 people charged in the Capitol attack on January 6th of 2021. Others just pardoned include Mark Meadows, Trump's former White House Chief of Staff, Jeffrey Clark, a former assistant attorney general, Kenneth Chesbrough, a private attorney who formerly advised Trump, and Sidney Powell, a lawyer who worked on Trump's behalf in the 2020 election. All four faced state charges in Georgia related to election interference, and Chesbrough and Powell have pleaded guilty. Martin told former Trump advisor Steve Bannon on his quote-unquote War Room podcast that as pardon attorney and also as head of the DOJ's quote-unquote weaponization working group, he's leading an extensive effort to identify a broader swath of people that Trump believes were wronged. Martin said that in a meeting in the Oval Office, the president told him to find people, quote-unquote, that deserve a break, including those, quote, weaponized against us by Biden and Obama, by the way, unquote. Quote, and so the pardon attempts to start to change that, and I think it's the opening, Martin said. I know because I'm involved in getting to the truth of 2020, unquote. Also, Martin said, quote, we've been fighting for 2 months to figure out a path on Tina Peters, unquote, including pressuring Colorado authorities. Peters, a former Republican clerk and recorder in Colorado who denies that Biden won the 2020 election, was convicted of allowing someone to access data from a secure voting system in attempts to prove baseless election denial conspiracies. She was sentenced to 9 years in prison in October 2027 on 7 charges involving tampering with election machines, including attempting to influence a public servant, conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation, and first-degree official misconduct. Contributing to this article was Bart Jansen from the USA Today. You have been listening to a reading of articles and features from the Thursday, November 13th issue of the Democrat and Chronicle. Your reader has been Betsy Waugh. Thank you for listening.